Welcome to Guerrilla Radio. Well, with this year's fall in BC comes the municipal elections. October 20th is your chance, if you're a citizen of majority age and possess the requisite identification, to cast votes for mayor and council, capital region district directors, and school board trustees. Unlike the larger provincial and federal elections, candidates in these polls are not generally professional politicians, but citizen peers interested in the issues governing the way our communities run and how the place where we live will evolve and develop in the near term. These are issues amid the accelerated pace of change around here of unprecedented importance. Ted Smith is a longtime justice activist and co-founder of the Victoria Cannabis Buyers Club, which provides cannabis-based products to people with terminal and incurable medical conditions. Ted broke the legal trail in the medical marijuana struggle, persevering repeated harassment and arrest, and taking the case all the way to Canada's Supreme Court, and winning. Ted Smith in the first half. And Jordan Reichert is no stranger to politicking, the mental health and addictions professional, animal advocate, community organizer, and Victoria local, ran in the last federal election and has too put himself forward for a seat on Victoria City Council this time around. Jordan Reichert and seeking public policy that reflects the values, needs, and diversity of Victoria in the second half. And Victoria-based activist and CFUV radio broadcaster at large, Janine Bancroft, will be here at the bottom of the hour with the Left Coast Events Bulletin of some of the good things to be gotten up to around here in the coming week. But first, Ted Smith and a campaign to make government more accountable and accessible to citizens. Stick around. Well, welcome back to the program, Ted.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris.
Well, it's always great to speak with you. Ted, you've been at the heart of community activism in Victoria for a long time, a couple decades anyway. Why, Ted, did you decide now to run for city council?
Well, in a way, it really does seem the accumulation of decades of work to step up to city council. In the last few decades, I've really focused on the Cannabis Buyers Club and providing medicine to sick people. And in the last couple of years, the federal government has sort of abruptly decided to legalize cannabis and heavily in favor of large corporations and not really beneficial to patients much. And so my main thrust in running for the city council is to not only help our club and other clubs transition into the new paradigm, but to also help the provincial and federal governments, get their head around what needs to be done here in order to help our industry and our society flourish by embracing cannabis and making the best use of it.
Well,
and so,
go ahead. Oh, I can see that the phones are ringing off the hook at the Ted Smith campaign headquarters there.
Well, yeah, I'm in the office. Yeah. Yeah, so certainly that is my primary goal. But I've been working in sort of the anti-poverty community for decades, and it breaks my heart to see how poorly different levels of government are managing the issues of homelessness and such. And I think I have a responsibility to help do things better for everyone's benefit.
Well, and of course, these issues of homelessness, poverty, and disease, potentially fatal diseases, they go hand in hand as well, right?
Oh, they do on so many levels. For example, one of the members of the club the other week was telling me a story about how she had pipes burst in her apartment, and she's on disability. She grew up and lives in Victoria. But now she was suddenly, because of this problem in her apartment building that she had nothing to do with, she's been thrust out to the shelters and now onto the streets. She's got, a bunch of physical problems, but she doesn't have any mental health issues or addictions or anything else aside from the fact that now she cannot find a place in Victoria that she can afford. She can't get to a outlying community and find a place to move into. She doesn't have the resources on many levels to do that. Her belongings have been diminishing since she's been made homeless, and it's a terrible thing to see these, you know, just cumulative problems from affordable housing to lack of services for the sick and disabled. You know, we don't even have some kind of hospice center for street people here in town. They're constantly, you know, dying in the most miserable of situations, and, you know, we can do better than that.
Well, if there's any parallels to be drawn too, as we've seen this massive growth and millions upon millions of dollars being made for developers and other real estate professionals, the homelessness situation has paralleled that rise, and we're seeing no, well, they in a sense, they intersect each other and are influenced by each other. And the fact that the city can't find the land to you know, or won't find the land, devote the land to people in these situations, really begs the question of what kind of society we want in our city.
Exactly. You know, 10 years ago, the courts ruled that it was unacceptable to not allow people anywhere to sleep at all. You know? And since we've been letting people sleep in parks for a few hours in evenings, that is such a bare minimal mm-hmm. response to a very serious and growing problem. And I think the way that it's been dealt with on all levels of government is abhorrent, and I think it befalls upon the city council and the city to protect the citizens when the other levels of government fail them.
Well, I see a mention of this very thing on a lot of people's platforms that are running for city council and the mayorship for that matter as well. It seems that every time there's election, everybody cares about the homeless and laments the fact that not enough is being done. Not enough is being done. What do you, I know that the city is only one element in this. They can't, you know, solve these problems that are much bigger than any jurisdiction. But what are your ideas of ways, Ted, that the city can begin to address this long overdue and woefully inadequately addressed situation?
Well, you're right. The city is only one player in this bigger puzzle. But the city has a key role in bringing the stakeholders together in our local community to deal with these various matters. And so it could be a facilitator in a process towards, you know, solving these problems on a local level, bringing the higher levels of government, the developing community, you know, and nonprofits and other affected groups, and, you know, bring the stakeholders together and work on something that would benefit everyone. The same could have been done in the cannabis field a long time ago. Instead of, you know, declaring the stakeholders are all these, you know, government authorities and leaving out the affected communities, mm-hmm. You know, it's been a terrible mess. And so, you know, the city is an echo chamber of ideas, and, you know, to just do that during the elections and have everybody firing off all these ideas that there's no follow through on is wrong. There should be, you know, different groups formed, you know, task force, whatever the case may be, that the city either temporarily or in the long run helps facilitate, that deal with these different matters and both make the politicians accountable for the things that they say they're going to commit to, but also to make the other organizations work together. You know, in the 90s, I did a lot of other street youth work. I worked with what was called Inner City Youth Work Society. It was on Pandora. It was a phenomenal group. Actually, one of my platforms is to resurrect something like that for street youth between 18 and 29 to gain work experience with the thrift store, fixing stuff up and selling it and things like that. And so through that experience, I became a representative on what was called the Crunch Initiative. And it was a really interesting project that only lasts for less than 5 years. I wish it was still going, because it brought together all these different stakeholders in the downtown to talk about a host of different issues. It was really broad. It brought the capital region, the city, the province in different levels, you know, and landlords and tenants and churches. And, you know, it's, what could happen with collaboration and communication in the city is phenomenal. For example, at the time, we wanted to talk about food services for the, you know, the different soup kitchens and stuff. And they got together, all the different church groups and others that provided free meals through the day. And it turned out that they'd all worked their hours around each other, so at any time of the day, there's somewhere you can go for a coffee at the very least. But at the same time, they didn't know each other at all. So we got them all together, and they're meeting and talking, and one of the items that came up was that they didn't have a shared kitchen to work in. And then it came out that, you know, they all bought food from Thrifties, too. Well, gee, wouldn't it be smarter to bulk purchase and get better deals? And then they started to discuss with St. Vincent de Paul's. It was building a center over on Yates Street because there's a kitchen in the bottom of that building. And then, you know, everybody got excited about using the same kitchen and the same resources and having different volunteers coming in. And until it became clear that the United Church would also be wanting to give out condoms, and the Catholic Church wouldn't let that happen in their building, and the entire project of collaboration fell apart at that point.
Yeah,
because the city wasn't, like, you know, working behind the scenes and let it, you know, befall. Like, you know, we could be doing so much more if we worked together as a city, I guess is my point.
Well, and the fact that this, that in a lot of areas, it's, they've different government levels of government have allowed private charities and churches move in to places that they traditionally took care of when it comes to dealing with homeless issues and people in need, and thus this condom fracas or whatever other sectarian interests get in the way of providing services to people equally.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, it's okay.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Ted Smith. Ted is a longtime justice activist. He's a co-founder of the Victoria Cannabis Buyers Club. He's been working on that very long. He broke the trail, really, to all the way to Canada's Supreme Court in getting medical marijuana laws turned overturned. Ted, it's a bit of a misnomer, in my view, to see that the various levels of government are talking about legalizing marijuana when it seems that they're just creating different laws that keep things criminalized. Am I getting the right idea of this?
It's been a bizarre process. There seems to be more laws than ever, and the punishments in many cases seem to be increased potentially in sentencing. We'll see whether the judges actually follow through on that. But there's a whole host of rules, intoxication in public being one. And it's sad to see how it's almost prohibition 2.0 coming in. In fact, the Buyers Club here won't be able to even try to comply with the law for at least a year from now, because edibles and extracts that our patients need won't be made legal right away. And we'll have to see even if the what is legally available immediately is going to be satisfactory or not, because we have many very sick people that require very high concentrations of THC and the oils and such that they use. So we may have to try and exist outside of the system for quite some time. That being said, while the province will be initially tolerant of those defying the law, they have made it clear that once the legal supply is up and running, they intend upon shutting down any and all people that openly defy them, such as us. So we're looking at having a war with the provincial and federal governments happening here over patients being able to use products that we won a unanimous Supreme Court of Canada decision over.
Yeah, and well,
it's really quite bizarre.
Well, and with that Supreme Court decision behind you, then what's the new angle being taken to shut down your operation or operations like yours?
Well, the argument is that we're not medical because we don't require all of our patients to have prescriptions from doctors. There's a lot of reasons why patients are having trouble getting doctors to recommend it, even with legalization. A lot of doctors just don't want to have anything to do with this plant and won't sign anything. And so we're not considered part of the medical marijuana system. And we don't have any protection in law from there. We have the Charter of Rights and Freedoms behind us, But we are in this gray area at this point.
Well, are doctors operating independently, or are they following a Canadian Medical Association line when it comes to marijuana?
Oh, you're quite right. The College of Physicians and Surgeons and the CMA and a whole bunch of other so-called professionals have been beating a drum for years against the use of cannabis as medicine. And with legal recreational access, they're saying that doctors don't need to prescribe it at all, that the medical marijuana system can be completely dismantled because people can purchase what they need from the store down the street if they're an adult. So the doctors have been hoping all along that legalization would essentially trump the medical marijuana system, and in that case patients would be left with even less resources and fewer options.
Well, Ted, on a different tack now, you started your campaign, I guess, unofficially, way back in July, putting out the word that you plan to run. So this isn't a last-minute thing. I'm curious to know, Ted, what kind of media, other than this program, of course, that you're getting so far?
Well, it's funny because actually I think it was back in May when I really first put my head out to run for this. And it's worked out exceptionally well with the dates, because at first I didn't know it was going to be legal or cannabis on the 17th, and then 3 days later the election. And so I've been getting a lot of press over the cannabis legalization matter. I would probably understand CFAX to be your arch nemesis, but they have been having me on their show. But in a way, more importantly, just last week, I was on the front page of the Times columnist with a Jack Knox article, going back 15 years to when I made these certificates that were called Cannabons, and we raised about $5,000 for court cases back around 2005 for that. And so, or 2003, it's all over. I made the front page of the Times columnist, and then a few weeks before that, the timing for an article in the Victoria News was perfect, because the same week that two councillors announced that they were not seeking re-election, a really great article by Kristen Anthony that gave a really broad picture of my ideas from, like, one of the things I am promoting, because housing is actually the biggest issue in town. Housing and homelessness are pretty much the two big ones. Mm-hmm. And we need a rapid transit corridor along Douglas and Blanchard, one rapid transit system going out to the ferry, another one out to Langford. And we should be building a high density from, pretty much the edge of downtown out to Saanich along those corridors. And we wouldn't need to have to put a lot of parking in, because, we could have, these tall buildings, 15, 20 stories even, that, the top 10 stories could be all these expensive condos, and then they could have, affordable housing and seniors housing and some community amendments in the bottom floors, and then some retail on the very bottom. And so we could be building a whole community and probably infill 8,000-10,000 people in there without really significantly impacting the rest of the city at all.
Well, I wonder, though, when we see that kind of development in Vancouver, most of these, the developers always promise a certain percentage of what they call affordable housing, which, it isn't really so affordable when you're talking about some of the people that, really most desperately need housing. They don't have a sniff at it. And it doesn't seem, we just see more people coming to live here, but we don't see these core issues being addressed. If anything, they get more severe.
Well, and I agree, which is why I also agree with having some public-private partnerships happening here. There's money available through the federal and provincial governments right now that if the city put up some money, we would get a lot of help building, truly affordable housing and co-ops, and, that corridor would be the area to put it in. And I think developers have gotten away with far too much under this council. It seems staff are, pushing projects through and not really holding people accountable. I'm shocked at what I'm hearing this council has allowed in certain cases, because it's not been affordable in many cases. And, that's something that I think is partly because we have become really reliant. There's been very little public housing built for years, mm-hmm. and we need, you know, more co-op housing. And, you know, we can have co-op housing in large buildings. It doesn't have to be small.
Well, they should have. They should have thought of that. Put some co-op housing on that $100 million bridge. I think that might have been a beginning. You know, because now that all that money has been spent and dedicated, I'm curious as to how willing the city is to spend any more money on big projects or projects that don't involve digging up sidewalks.
Are you kidding me? They're itching to do this project at the Crystal Pool, which could be a huge boondoggle if it's not done right.
Right.
And they've already had to backtrack. Like, actually, you know, one of my platforms was to review what was happening at Crystal Pool. And I understand just recently they finally agreed to do that because right. of public pressure. And so the way that it's been done so far has been terrible. The city has been railroading a project through that hasn't met the community's needs at all. And so, you know, I've been scared about the amount of money being spent. And, you know, it could very well be that we could just spend a few million on some upgrades on the current pool. Or another option that I heard for the first time last night was building something alongside the arena that would use the energy from the cooling and heating of the surface of the in the arena that would, you know, kind of partner up with the pool. And then, you know, we could not only put the pool where there's parking lot now, but you know, when the old Crystal Pool gets taken down, maybe we could even make more green space for a change. So there's a lot of other options that the city, you know, really didn't look at in their rush to develop a mega project.
Ted.
You'd think after the bridge and the bike lanes, they'd learn, right?
Well, and also the actual arena itself was fraught with controversy, as I recall, and overruns
right.
and everything else when it was when the old memorial was taken down. Well, in the last minute we got, Ted, now your tagline for your campaign is to make government more accountable, and I think that's a little bit of what you're talking about there, but also to make the City Hall more accessible. How do you envision that happening?
All sorts of ways. For example, I put up a Facebook post today where I have pamphlets in my club here from all the people running for city council. If you go to City Hall right now, there's no information on who's running for city council. It heavily favors the incumbents.
Right.
And the city should have, you know, this information accessible so people in all the community centers and City Hall can see, you know, who is actually, you know, running for debate. There's a number of ways that both online and on the ground, we could not only make democracy more accessible, but the decision-making process more accessible by having regular task force and other, you know, groups set up through City Hall.
Well, Ted, the date, again, is the 20th. So for those people that don't know, because, you know, the word's not getting out properly, go to you can go to victoria.ca, also the city's site, and they've got a rundown on the election. I don't know if they've got all the candidates there. I looked at the site this morning, but not deeply. Well, Ted Smith, good luck with this election coming up on the 20th, and we'll talk to you again, eh?
Thank you so very much, Chris. Always a pleasure.
All right, then, bye for now. Now, I'm going to take a brief break, and then when I come back, I'll be joined by Janine, and she's going to bring us up to date with some of the things going on, non-election oriented, and maybe election oriented, too. So stick around for that.
There's a pre-loved clothing swap on Friday, October 12th at the Burnside Gorge Community Association from 5 till 8. Any leftovers will be donated to charity, and there is an entrance fee. There's some advance tickets or $10 cash at the door, and all cash raised will be donated to the Indigenous Perspective Society. Aside from that, swapping is a sustainable and eco-friendly way to refresh your wardrobe and connect with your community. So Friday, 5 o'clock at the Burnside Gorge Community Association, 471 Cecilia Road in Victoria. In Vancouver on Friday, U.S.-Canada Hands-Off Venezuela Vancouver Protest Action at the U.S. Consulate, 1075 West Pender Street, and the Vancouver Art Gallery on Robson Street. So two actions at 4 p.m. at the consulate a protest action, U.S.-Canada Hands Off Venezuela, and at 5:30 at the museum, a petition drive and info display, No More U.S.-Canada Sanctions and Threats, Respect the Self-Determination of the Venezuelan People. Friday also, the weekly vigil for the pigs. You're asked to join in spreading the message of kindness and compassion at Langley Pig Saves Vigil in front of the Britco Pork Slaughterhouse on the Fraser Highway in Langley. The Pig Save is part of a worldwide network known as the Save Movement. Through purely love-based activism, we aim to raise awareness about the plight of farmed animals, help people become vegan, bear witness, and build a grassroots animal justice movement. So there is carpooling happening. Check the Facebook weekly vigil for the pigs. On Saturday, October 13th, an election rally with Seattle City Councillor Kashama Sawant and COPE Councillor candidate Jean Swanson, along with other COPE candidates for Vancouver Council, School Board, and Parks Board. Jean Swanson has recently been named the best city activist by the Georgia Strait. She is calling for a rent freeze and a mansion tax to counter the political and developer machinery at City Hall. Kashama Sawant is an activist who was elected to Seattle City Council on a bold platform of fight for $15 to increase minimum wage, implement rent control, and tax the super rich to fund mass transit and education. So the rally is Saturday, October 13th, 7 till 9 p.m. at the SFU Harbor Center, room 1900, 515 West Hastings Street. It's free, although donations to the 2018 COPE campaign are greatly encouraged. The COPE campaign is hoping to elect Jean Swanson, Ann Roberts, Derek O'Keefe, Barb Parrott, Diana Day for school board, Gwen Giesbrecht, and John Irwin. Saturday, Storytelling is Medicine, Indigenous Art Symposium at the BC Museum in Victoria. The workshop portion of this event is sold out. There's a wait list being taken. There's a public performance from 4:30 to 5, and then a panel discussion from 5 till 6. That's free and open to the public on Saturday at the museum. For an interdisciplinary and intergenerational symposium that will seek to present and explore Indigenous philosophies related to storytelling and oral histories. Saturday, Forests Activism Training Weekend in Victoria, hosted by the Sierra Club BC. On the 13th and 14th, learn the skills to take your old-growth forest activism to the next level. Spend the weekend with Sierra Club BC organizers and campaigners to learn about the campaign to protect the last old-growth rainforest of Vancouver Island. You'll learn strategy, tactics, storytelling, and other organizing skills, and how to use them to make real change in BC's forests. October 13th and 14th, 9:30 to 5 at UBC. So Sierra Club is hosting that. If you want more information, Vic Matters, an all candidates forum on Saturday from 2 till 4 at 1515 Douglas Street. All mayoral and council candidates are invited to attend Saturday. Sunday in Victoria, the second annual citywide beach cleanup hosted by Surf Rider, partnering with the City of Victoria. The format is similar to last year. There are team captains at various beaches. There's a 1.5 hour power cleanup, and then everybody goes back to Clover Point to sort the debris, sort out the plastics, and for a group photo and some snacks. Various beaches, including Willows, Cabro Bay, Cordova Bay, Gonzales, Clover Point, Ogden Point, the Gorge Waterway, Lime Bay, and Esquimalt Lagoon. Also on next Tuesday, an all candidates meeting leading up to the election on the 20th at Stelly's Crossroad at Stelly's Secondary School. This would be a Central Saanich candidates meeting from 7 till 9, October 16th in Vancouver, an all candidates meeting for arts and culture on the 15th from 5 till 7 at the Museum of Vancouver. And Tuesday at the Shaw Center for the Salish Sea in Sydney, Ecosystems on the Edge, Restoring Coastal Sand Ecosystems, specifically looking at Sydney Spit in the Gulf Islands National Park Reserve, which provides a significant example of rare coastal sand ecosystem, a dynamic environment where marine and terrestrial influences meet. There are invasive plant species there, and Parks Canada has initiated a project to restore a portion of Sydney Spit and removing those invasive plants. You can learn more about all of this Tuesday, October 16th at the Shaw Centre for the Salish Sea in Sydney. In Victoria on Wednesday, the Co-op Cafe series continues. This month, the Women in Need Community Co-op will be hosting the Co-op Cafe. WIN supports women in our local community along their journey between crises, self-sufficiency, and wellness. Learn about WIN programs and their involvement in Victoria and Langford. The event happens 6:30 to 8:30 at City Studio Victoria, Suite 711 Douglas Street. And then finally, Chris, leading up to October 20th, day one, a 420 celebration of legalization. Oh, I guess it's October 17th, right? October 20th is the election. Locally, October 17th is officially when Canada legalizes cannabis. So Trees Island Grown will be having a little party. It's 19 plus. Join to celebrate a new era in Canadian history. They've got live music, DJs, art, food and drink, and good vibes to pave the way for a new day. Trees Island Grown's at 546 Yates Street. That would be Wednesdays from 4 till 8. And that's what I got for this week. Thanks, Chris.
Well, and thank you, Janine. I'm going to take a brief break here, and I'll be back with Jordan Reichert to continue our election coverage for the upcoming Victoria City Council and mayoral elections. Back to Guerrilla Radio. Yes, that's Rogue Wave. Vote for me, dummy. Inspired, well, copied actually, guided by Voices tune for the 30 Days, 30 Songs album that came out trying to unseat Donald Trump before he was seated. That didn't work out. Well, and it's a reminder, October 20th, of course, Victorians and others in BC will be voting if you're of age and all the other requisite things you have to do. Jordan Reichert is no stranger to politicking, the mental health and addictions professional, animal advocate, community organizer, and Victoria local ran in the last federal election. And he's put himself forward, too, for a seat on the Victoria City Council this time around. Welcome to the program, Jordan.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Chris.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Jordan, why are you running for city council? Straight up.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm born and raised in Victoria, as you mentioned. So for me, you know, I have a strong sense of identity and my roots go really deep in the community. Mm-hmm. So I really want to, you know, represent, I think, a large portion of what makes Victoria, Victoria, such a wonderful place and my experience in it over the last 36 years. You know, also I've had quite a diverse role in Victoria over that time, everything from working in the service industry to being an electrician to being an animal advocate and working in mental health and addictions for the past 12 years. So I really feel like I've seen kind of a broad intersection of, you know, the community, and I've lived in almost every neighborhood in the city. And so I really want to bring that diversity of views and a reasonable balanced interest in, you know, preserving our city and standing up for social and environmental justice within that context locally.
Well, I'm with you. I've lived here an awfully long time, and in every every neighborhood I can think of, as well. And there's been a lot of change. I've seen a ton of change since I've been living here, and lots of new people. I think the population has maybe even doubled since I was a kid. You know, growing up and going to school out in Gordon Head and all that. I mean, it's really changed a lot. And when you talk about diversity of voices, what exactly do you mean?
Yeah, well, it's making sure that people from all walks of life have a voice. And of course, I know that it might sound a bit strange, but it's that making sure that animals as well are included in having some representation, because they are our friends and families and neighbors in many cases. And so, you know, they need to be represented as well. But it's making sure that, you know, people with disabilities and accessibility issues are involved in the conversation as our city does continue to change and evolve. You're right, there's been tremendous changes. But in some cases, people have been left out of that the consultation process. It could mean people experiencing homelessness, people with mental health issues, you know, making sure that they have somebody on council that is representing them and listening to them and bringing their concerns to council. And that also includes our people in our neighborhoods who, you know, have grown up here, maybe have kids here, and they want their families and their interests represented as well. And so, you know, it's always a struggle for a counselor, I think, mm-hmm. to balance all the interests that want to have a say at the table. But I think we have to have a strong commitment to making sure that those voices all are heard and that they do have strong representation, and that it's meaningful representation, so that when they do come forward with the many concerns that they may face or struggles they may face, that they feel like council has actually, you know, taken what they've said into consideration in their deliberations and applied it to policy rather than just saying, you know, thanks for your input, but then kind of ignoring that those requests or concerns.
Well, from the outside, it seems to me that the policy making at this level is kind of a zero sum game, or at least it's perceived that way. That you know, we can either have this or we can have that, but we can't have both. I don't know that there's a city council anywhere in this country that doesn't serve business interests first, no matter what their rhetoric. Mm-hmm. It always seems to be that the developers get the first and last say, and we've certainly seen a lot of that. There's people that thought that this current council was pretty far to the left and that it would be taking care of some of these issues. Do you think that the current government we have at City Hall has made inroads? I mean, are there any laudable inroads that you can see that they've made, or directions that you could add to?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the current council, you're right. I think people came into it and thought, oh, we're going to have a really progressive council that is really going to address some of the inequities in our society and such, and not just be the, you know, kind of obey the masters of the development world. But unfortunately, that wasn't the case. I think that was partially due to some just some good politicking at the beginning is that kind of fooled people to a degree. And then we've had this response over the last 4 years. I think there have been some people who have really addressed the issues on council, and I'm very proud of them for standing up in the way that they have. However, we need more of those people. We need to extend that voice, you know, for the people, for the environment, for animals on city council, so that, you know, business is not the major kind of force on council, and development is not the major force, but making sure that our communities are inclusive and diverse spaces that welcome a broad intersection of social of participation by people of various socioeconomic positions, and that we prioritize the things that are going to keep us well as a community. You know, we don't really talk about it this election hardly at all, but you know, with the IPCC's recent report on climate change, I mean, it's like, how do we just, you know, how do we ignore that at this time? It seems essential for us to be talking about, you know, the environmental policy of Victoria within the broader global context and what we can do.
Well, as a coastal city too, I think it might do as well. The International Panel on Climate Change has just come out with a new report a couple of days ago, saying what I took to mean that we've got about 20 years left, and it's sayonara, you know, head for the high ground, or if not sooner. Well, you know, Jordan, I received something in my mailbox yesterday. And it's a very official looking letter from and just says Victoria Municipal Elections and the date and candidate information enclosed with the City of Victoria's email address on it. And when I opened it up, imagine my surprise that I saw leaflets for three of the candidates running, three incumbent candidate or two incumbents and one aspiring candidate. I don't know, but there's nothing in it that says that they're a coalition amongst themselves or a voting bloc or anything like this. I phoned up the city and said, "Hey, what's this? Why are you sending some material out for some candidates and not others?" And they said, "Well, we didn't send that out at all." So it seems a little suspect to me. I don't know. You know, maybe you can look into that yourself. But when I look at the pamphlets, though, Jordan, all three of them say affordable housing. Everybody says affordable housing is the biggest issue. And yet, I don't see much going on, except for there's a lot of shoulds. You know, we should do this, we should do that. You know, maybe these people should do that with us and that. But I don't really see much concrete action. Can you tell me... Give us a lamplight in the darkness here, Jordan, about what you what your vision about addressing this crisis is.
Yeah, well, you know, we really have to see it for what it is and address it at multiple levels. So, you know, what I would do essentially, working at the dealing with the side of, you know, people who are most vulnerable on the street experiencing homelessness, is, you know, I was at a debate a few nights ago, and the option was presented quite clearly by one of the directors of the Art Place Society. It was like, if each municipality built 50 units of modular housing to house people experiencing homelessness, we could get everybody off the street and housed. And there's no reason why each community doesn't have the power to make that happen. And I think we need to, you know, embark on a partnership between the municipalities throughout the CRD to see this happen. And I absolutely am going to advocate for that, because it just seems like an essential cornerstone for us to deal with, you know, the burgeoning homelessness situation in our city. Now, you know, for people who are not experiencing homelessness, but are in that precarious place of, you know, working and living paycheck to paycheck and feeling that the stress of rising rents and you know, they're paying, you know, 50% maybe of their income to rent each month is completely unsustainable. We have to see the cost of housing brought down. And that means that, and what I mean is, when I talk about rentals in that case, is that we need to create more rental units in our region. So purpose-built rentals, we need to rezone with the new powers given to us by the province to make sure we're creating those rental units. I'd like to see somewhere between 4,000 to 6,000 rental units created in Victoria to make sure we're meeting that demand. And that will in turn help bring down the cost, but it has to be 30% or less of a person's income to be sustainable. So that has to be foundationally built into the kind of housing that we're creating to make sure it's affordable for people throughout the region. You know, the other piece of that is going to be kind of in the, you know, wealthier stratus of people who are in the real estate market. And it's really important that we separate real estate from housing, because real estate is, you know, the buying and selling of real estate, and it's not about being affordable. It's not about providing homes. It's about a market-based system, which, right, of course, is not something that is meant to serve the people or the interests of the community. It's meant to just make profit off people. So it's really important that we create as much non-market housing in the region as possible to make sure that we're kind of undermining that system and creating opportunities for people to be involved, to be housed without feeling like they have to get into that market. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. And so, you know, those are kind of like three key areas that I want to focus on. And some of the top area, like I was talking about, is, you know, more cooperative housing, maybe tiny houses for people who want to do that. You know, modular housing can be explored as well. But I think that there's a lot of different ways that we can find housing for people without falling down the same path of just building luxury condos and thinking that somehow that's going to trickle down to people who are really struggling. It doesn't. We've proven that over the last 4 years, if not the last decade. Yeah. We need to get out of the real estate bubble and just focus on that actual housing people in a way that it matters to them every day.
Well, yeah, we can look at jurisdictions all over. I mean, not only Canada, but in North America and even over in Europe as well. I mean, I wonder if we don't want to spook people that do have rental properties, though. My fear is that the person who owns the house that, you know, is broken into suites that I rent will say, you know, I've got real estate guys leaving pamphlets on my doorstep every day. And, you know, if the city's going to make it difficult for people that, you know, own rental properties, I'll just sell and let somebody come and build a condo on it, you know?
Well, that's what we need to do. I mean, like we said, we have to both build more rental properties, but we also have to retain the rental properties we have. And so that means we have to incentivize it to the, you know, owners of those properties to make sure that it's worthwhile for them to keep and also maintain those properties, because we see people being rent evicted, right, under the kind of duress of that of upgrades or maintenance. We have to close some of those loopholes that allow people to be kicked out of their homes because of these loopholes around maintenance and renovations and such. You know, just getting back to tenants' rights to a large degree is an essential cornerstone of making sure that people can retain their housing that maybe they've lived in for 20 years or longer. And it's the only way, and you know, for seniors or other people who are on a fixed income, you know, moving at this point in this kind of a market just it's not realistic. It's something that, you know, could lead to them being homeless.
Well, and as I recall, I can't recall the number exactly, but more than half of the people living in Victoria are renters anyway.
Yeah, so, it's 57%, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Jordan Reichert. Jordan is running for Victoria City Council. His platform tagline is public policy that reflects the values, needs, and diversity of Victoria. Well, Reichert, a little bit about the housing. And you talked about the environment, and we have a problem with poverty here, which is reflected in the housing. I'm looking at your website, jordanreichert.ca. That's R-E-I-C-H-E-R-T.ca, jordanreichert.ca. And governance is another one of your, this is a very nice website too, by the way, but governance is another one of the issues that you highlight. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, as I've been talking to people in the community over the past, you know, well, 6 months probably, you know, one of the biggest concerns is just a lack of trust in our politicians and in city council. It seems that, you know, people really don't feel that council has properly consulted with them on numerous projects, and mm-hmm. and not only that, but that I think, like you mentioned at the near the beginning of the segment, is that, you know, people kind of came into this thinking, hey, this is to be a left progressive council that was going to get some things done for the people. And while there have been some positive steps, overall, it's been pro-development all the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that has really, I think people are forgetting that a little bit. And now that election time has hit and all these promises are coming out, and I hear people on the campaign trail saying things that contradict basically what they've done for the last 4 years, and mm-hmm. I find it really interesting, of course, that rhetoric, but that's not the kind of politician that I want to be. I want to be independent. I want to be authentic. And, you know, when I ran previously in the 2015-20 federal election, you know, people came up to me after and said, you're the only person talking about real things this election. You're not talking from some speaking points. You're not talking from a party line. You're talking about as a person who lives here, and they respected that, and they said they would vote for me if I ever ran for municipal election, because they had 8 votes rather than just 1 in that first past the post. So for me, it's about being an authentic voice as well, being somebody that people can trust, that people know what they're going to get, and that they believe that I will act with integrity when it comes to, you know, serving them as residents and neighbors, but also that they trust my judgment if maybe it's something that might be less popular, that it's the right thing. And I think sometimes people forget, when people don't trust politicians and they make those kinds of choices that are the tough ones, people look at it differently than when they trust them and they make those unpopular decisions, because they know that they're doing the right thing. And I think that's what we need to do here. And I hope that I have a council that is reasonable and balanced to work with, and that we all can kind of just reflect on what are the needs of the community over specific interests, such as developers, to profit off our community, and making sure, you know, we get a better deal for the people.
Well, change is constant, and there's been we've had more of our fair share of change in a very concentrated period of time. It's not just the city's, you know, situation. This is something going on in Vancouver and in a lot of other jurisdictions as well. But, you know, as we started with, you've lived here all your life. I've lived here even longer than you've been alive, if you can believe that. But I see this change. I mean, change is necessary to a degree for sure, but I see that the quality of life in Victoria is going down. I see it, you know, with every corner you go around, there's another construction site, they're burnishing sidewalks. And you know, how can you rein in some of this or the city policy that deals with public works? I mean, personally, I think that, you know, they shouldn't be tearing up sidewalks unless it's absolutely, you know, a severe issue of somebody hurting themselves right now, when there's so much building going on around every corner, not to mention all the pipes that are going to be laid because of the new sewage treatment system that got voted in. Is it possible from that position, from the city council, to rein in the city works department, or have they just run amok?
Well, you know, I think you're absolutely right. First of all, you know, change is just a part of life. And I really don't like using the words like, you know, change, fight for change necessarily, or people are scared of change and want to keep things exactly the same. Change is just what happens every single day. And, you know, we need to embrace it. Otherwise, we're going to be left behind to a large degree. Now, in terms of, you know, how the city has changed, and the effect that it has on the city, that I feel like a lot of it is forced, not organic. So, you know, when you kind of set a mandate that we're going to do all these things and keep all these people busy and create this boom, you know, an employment boom in many cases, or a market boom in many cases, you kind of disregard the natural forces of change that just allow things to happen organically and much more in tune with people's day-to-day lives. The city has been absolutely kind of uprooted in a sense by all the development, all the condos that have been built over the last decade, 5 years even. Every street I go down seems to have, one road seems to be blocked off because there's a tower going up someplace. And, you know, while that is a part of a growing city, at the same time, it seems to have all been pushed to happen rather than allowing it to be much more organic and sort of in time with maybe the city's rhythm or where the city was versus where it is now. And so for me, you know, it's just taking a step back and assessing what is actually good for the city. You know, the city talks about wanting to add 20,000 more people to the core, and yet you have to wonder if it's actually meeting the needs of the people that live here today. And why is it so focused on adding those extra 20,000 people? And if you ask the city, they'll say, look, we want to add the people because we want a higher tax base. But when you add 20,000 people, even if you get a higher tax base, you do have a greater strain on infrastructure, services, resources. And so once again, you're going to need to increase the density of people just to reach an appropriate tax base. So this just becomes a cyclical nature of kind of boom and bust in many cases. And I really don't see it in the long run benefiting Victoria. I think we need to get back to the more basic things of running the city, making sure it's well-maintained, and making sure the people that live here now are served and that they have homes and that those basic things. Because all those towers I see going up are not for the average person in Victoria to participate in housing or have meaningful, safe, affordable housing.
Well, and another thing that's not that the average Victorian doesn't participate in really is tourism, especially in the form of these cruise ships. And when we're working in any numbers of the people using the services of the city, the hundreds of thousands of tourists that come here every year, you know, should be a part of the equation. What about the cruise ships, Jordan, and the people of James Bay, especially? I know Marge Gardner, somebody who's also running, is concerned about the pollution caused by these ships and the transportation issues they present. In the last minute we have, Jordan, do you have any idea of a action on that front?
Yeah, I think we really need to scale back the cruise ship industry here in Victoria. I actually, previously as an electrician, I used to work on cruise ships. I know what an environmental disaster they are, and I also know that they, they use, there's some major labor concerns as well that take place on those ships. And, it's kind of, on the top, it seems all great and wonderful, and it's nice. You sit back and eat all the food. But on the lower decks, it's a totally different story. And I think that's the same sort of thing, is that tourism in the context of dropping tens of thousands of people, and it seems like good on the surface. But the people of James Bay have been relatively ignored in terms of their concerns, and I do applaud Mark Gardner on her work to raise those concerns to City Council. And I would also be a strong advocate in regards to making sure the people of James Bay and affected other areas as well actually, have more of a say when it comes to what's happening to their community and affects them, their daily life and their well-being, their social and environmental well-being.
Well, again, the election is October 20th. I've been speaking today with Jordan Reichert. He's running for City Council, and Ted Smith also is running. Jordan's website is jordanreichert.ca. You can check out his platform there. Thanks a lot, Jordan, for coming on and talking to us today, and good luck in the poll, eh?
Thanks, Chris. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, of course. Well, that's all I've got for this week. I want to thank Jordan and Ted and Janine and all the people up here that keep the wheels spinning week in and week out. You can stay tuned for the great programming that follows, and I know you will. But for me, that's all I've got for this week. Until the next time.